Good afternoon. I'd like to call the meeting together of the Board of Water and Natural Resources, September 30th. I would like to welcome everyone participating in today's meeting or listening online. The meeting is streaming live on SD.net, a service of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. The meeting is also being recorded and audio will be made available online following the meeting. To find the audio recording online, do a web search for South Dakota Board Commission's portal, follow the link, and select the name of the board. For the benefit of our online listeners, I request that all participants, including board members, please identify yourself when speaking. Participants are reminded to keep their microphones or phones muted at all times unless speaking. Mr. Perkovich.
Thank you, Chairman Sobel. I do have a couple introductions I'd like to make. First of all, we have a new board member, Vance Newman. Vance, if you're out there and want to turn the camera on and say a couple words about yourself, we'd appreciate it.
Good afternoon. My camera doesn't seem to be working this afternoon on this computer, but that might benefit everybody there. So I just wanted to say I appreciate the opportunity. I know a couple names on the board and meant to get around to making some other phone calls for introductions earlier this week, but got to visit the good state of Montana and hunt elk up until early this week. So excited for the opportunity to learn and participate in any way I can.
And Vance, you work with Raymond James, is that correct, out in Rapid City?
Yeah, correct. Yep. No, my wife and I have four children. We reside in Rapid City. I'm a financial planner who has Raymond James as a broker dealer. My wife is a nurse anesthetist, and we've got four young kids we chase around the Black Hills all the time.
Well, welcome, Vance.
Thank you.
Also have two new staff members that I'd like to introduce, and the first is Abby Larson. Some of you may remember Abby. This is her second tour of duty with us. Abby worked for us for about a year and a half. She came into my office and said she liked the job, she liked the people, but she did not like living in Pierre. So Abby will be, hopefully she will still like the job and still like the people and be happy working out of our Rapid City Regional office. So Abby, again, welcome back. And Abby is a School of Mines grad. Anything you want to add, Abby?
Just say hello and nice to work with everyone again and looking forward to it.
And Abby has a new baby too, Arlo. So what, 3 months? 2 months?
3 months. Yep, right. 3 months.
Congratulations. Welcome back, Abby. And we also and you can drop off. I know you have that need survey thing that you need to do, so see you later. And we also have a new employee here in Pierre, Oliver Azania. He's got a BS degree in environmental resource engineering from Humboldt State University in California. So welcome to.
Well, thank you. I just want to say, thank you, and I look forward to being able to work and help out the community as best as I possibly can.
Very good. Thank you.
And I understand Oliver also has a 3-month-old.
I do.
So,
all right.
Him and Abby aren't getting much sleep, I hear. So, all right. That's it for introductions.
Very good. Thank you very much and welcome, everyone. Now we need a motion to approve the agenda, motion to approve the agenda.
So moved, Gunnerk.
Second, Bernhard.
Motion has been made and seconded. All in favor with an aye, opposed, nay. Brenda, please call the roll.
Bernhard.
Aye.
Gunnerk.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Lanning.
Aye.
Newman.
Aye.
And Sobel.
Aye. Motion carried. Now we need a motion to approve the minutes of the June 24th and the August 3rd meeting.
So moved, Gunnerk.
Second, Bernhard.
A motion has been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor with an aye, opposed, nay. Brenda, please call the roll.
Bernhard.
Aye.
Gunnerk.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Lanning.
Aye.
Newman.
Aye.
And Sobel.
Aye. Motion carries. Public comment period. Is anyone out there that's listening that have comments, suggestions? Hearing none, moving on to item number 5. I will begin the public hearing that has been advertised to begin at 1 o'clock. The purpose of the hearing is to receive public input and adopt FFY 2022 Brownfield Revitalization and Economic Development Program Work Plan. The Brownfield Work Plan identifies how the funds for the Brownfield Assessment and Cleanup Sum Fund will be used in the upcoming year. NIAID is the Inspection, Compliance, and Remediation Program and will introduce the fiscal year 2022 Brownfield Work Plan. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on the Brownfield Work Plan?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good afternoon, board members. My name is Nair Syed, and I'm in the South Dakota Brownfields Program. Each year, we come in front of you to have our Brownfields Work Plan approved. We get annual funding from the EPA to help the communities in the assessment and cleanup of the properties where expansion, redevelopment, and reuse is complicated by the presence or potential presence of contamination. This money is 100% federal money. There is no match required. To spend this money, we are required by law to come in front of you and present our work plan for your approval. And we are also required to have it published 30 days prior to the board hearing in 3 newspapers that we have done for public comments. We have not received any comments. And each one of you was sent a copy of the work plan. And if you look at table 1 on page 4, it lists the brownfield projects and the money allocated to spend on those projects. So with that, I will be happy to answer any question you may have. If not, then I will respectfully ask you to approve the 2022 brownfields work plan.
Well, back to the projects. I think I've asked you this before, and what you said you're going to provide me with a how I can get into review these reports.
My apologies, and as I was in the impression that everything is online, so you make it. But I will make sure that Brenda has the copy, and then she sent it to you.
And these are reports that are laid out in some sort of organization within the report itself?
Yes, sir.
And you provide that organization to them so they know how to write the report?
Yes, sir.
Very good, very good. And so, and then the question I have, one other question here, it says, you have no money to capitalize funds available to capitalize the revolving loan fund.
We have not received revolving loan fund from the EPA. The money that we get is only for the assessment and cleanup. The revolving loan fund, we have not. EPA has told us that they will consider it, but we have not gotten money ever.
And so your money basically comes from EPA?
EPA.
Funneled through the program.
There are two separate sub-funds. One is the assessment and cleanup, and the other one is the revolving loan fund that we have not gotten any money. We only get money from the assessment and cleanup grant.
And that money is for the projects themselves and for the support of your personnel?
Yes, sir.
And the people, one other question I've often wondered, how does somebody know? First of all, people know that this exists because you list it in the newspapers.
We do outreach. We go every community. We try to go to the community and meet with the local city administrators and the city public works director and try to do outreach that there are funds available to do the assessment and cleanup. And that's how we recruit all these projects.
And so if somebody has a project in mind, they call you or write you or somehow get a hold of the DNR?
The process is that they call us and then we send them the application.
Okay.
But the funding is only for nonprofit entity.
All right.
Mostly small towns or economic development corporations.
Gotcha.
Then we send them an application and then we review it. If they're eligible, then we do all the work. They get the report at the end.
And who decides the amount of money?
For the project.
Pardon?
based on the project, we have guidelines depending on the kind of assessment they will be doing. There are different kinds of assessment. Most commonly we get into phase one and phase two and asbestos. So we have guidelines with the phase one, how many hours they will expect. And we have a contract under the spill response plan. We have five consultants under that contract, and we have all the job categories and the hours required to do the work mentioned in that contract. So we look, compare the work plan that they submit to make sure they are following our guidelines.
So is $20,000 your maximum for a contract?
As I say, it depends on the site.
Yes.
The $20,000 that you're looking at, that's a big, huge site, 7-acre property, and they have multiple contaminants. So we have to do dozens of soil borings and monitoring wells, so that adds to the cost.
Well, even at Lake Preston, $25,000, if you got to do drillings and analysis, is that enough money to do it?
As I mentioned, it depends on the size of the property and the extent of the contamination.
Okay.
That the Lake Preston was a huge property. It was an old manufacturing plant, 7 acres. So we had to put, they have multiple contamination, petroleum, waste oil, and most predominantly contaminant was the chromium. So we had to put a lot of soil boring, and then after we quantified the contamination, we had to put monitoring wells to make sure the groundwater is not contaminated. So that's how it came up, $20,000.
But you just monitored the contaminants, but you didn't try to clean them up.
The reason we didn't, because Lake Preston Development Area applied for the grant. They are a nonprofit entity. So we helped them. They were trying to purchase that property. So we helped them assess the contamination before they get into the ownership. And once we define the extent of the contamination and quantify the levels of the contamination, we went after the responsible party, that was the owner-operator, 21st century manufacturer. So they were not, they were for-profit. They were not eligible for the cleanup. So we made sure that they do the cleanup before the Lake Preston Development Area buy that property.
Right.
So they did clean up, but with their money, not with our money, because they didn't qualify, because they were for-profit organization.
Very good. That was a very good reason to understand. It gives me a much better understanding of all this. Thank you, Mayor.
You guys do
great work.
Is there any other testimony from the audience? Okay, we're looking for a motion to approve the fiscal year 2022 Brownsfield Revitalization and Economic Development Program Work Plan.
So moved, Gunnar.
Second, Bernhard.
A motion has been made and seconded. In favor with an A, opposed nay. Brenda, please call the roll.
Bernhard?
Aye.
Gunnar?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Manning?
Aye.
Newman?
Aye.
Sobel?
Aye. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Item number 6, Game Fish and Parks update.
Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My name is...
A little louder, please.
That works a lot better now that the green light is on. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is John Lott. I'm the Aquatic Resources Chief with South Dakota Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. This afternoon, we have a presentation on aquatic invasive species. It's a topic that's been growing in importance in South Dakota over time as we get more invasive species, unfortunately. Now, this afternoon, what I have to share with you is a brief overview of the aquatic invasive species, or as we call it, the AIS issue. And then we'll talk specifically more about zebra mussels in depth as we go. Next. Right now in South Dakota, the AIS species that we know of include a series of fish, plants, and invertebrates. And just to point out a couple here that are some of the main ones. Actually, common carp is probably the biggest aquatic invasive species we have on the fish side. We've had that since the 1800s, unfortunately, when everyone believed it was a good thing to introduce into South Dakota and a lot of other states. Recently, it's the big-headed silver carp that are issues. If you look at plants, the main ones we have in South Dakota, Black Hills, we have the didymo, or what they call rock snot, which kind of looks like toilet paper on the rocks in a creek. Then as well as that, we have Eurasian water milfoil and curly leaf pondweed. On invertebrates, the main one we've been dealing with would be zebra mussels. We do have those other species in the state, but they're in a smaller number of locations, and they don't seem to be spreading very much.
What'd you call it, zebra mussel?
Zebra mussel.
How did that get into South Dakota?
That's a good question, and I don't have
the answer.
Exact answer for you. Next. So we'll start with those AIS fish, and here, next. Those invasive carps, again, a common carp, you have to include invasive carps, but right now the big ones are the silver, the big heads. The issue with these is that they eat plankton, or the small plants and the very small animals in the food chain. And by doing that, they start to compete with other species. And an example of that would be if you have an acre of water and it can support 100 pounds of fish. As you begin to add in these carp species, they begin to use up more and more of those pounds by eating and taking up the productivity of the system. Next. Right now, the range of big-headed carp or invasive carps, as we started calling them, includes the James River Basin for the length of South Dakota, a portion of the Vermilion River, and then the Big Sioux River as well, a portion of it. And next. The reason that they're present in the whole James River is there are no barriers on that particular stream. There are some low-head dams, but in periods of high flows or flooding, they aren't sufficient to stop the upstream movement of the carp species. On the Vermilion River, however, we do have East Vermilion Dam. Sioux Falls, we have the falls on the Big Sioux. And there's also a significant drop on the bypass that they have that goes through Sioux Falls and the Big Sioux. And thankfully, on the Missouri River, we have Gavin's Point Dam. And with these barriers, it's most likely, if they're moved upstream, it will be done by people. Next slide, please. On the plants, the issues with plants are that they grow extremely flat or fast. They outcompete native species. They form dense mats. Anyone who lives in Pier here or visits has seen the pondweed inside the frogwood in summertime. But certainly tangled propellers, they make fishing difficult, and at times they can lead to fish kills because at night when they decay, they use up oxygen. So if they're overly abundant in the water, they can cause some issues there. Next. The two species that we were talking about that are the most a concern would be Eurasian water milfoil, curly leaf pondweed. Right now, Eurasian water milfoil that we only have on the Missouri River system, which is really a surprise. We had it in Sharp to start with, and then it moved upstream and downstream, most likely in association with flows as you go downstream and boat track as you go upstream. Next. Curly leaf pondweed is spread throughout the state. We even have it in Rapid Creek. And on these slides, it'll say the known infestations because we don't know every water. There may be a population of babies out there that we haven't documented yet. But you can see here we go all the way from Broad Lake and Big Stone and Traverse and in the northeast, Rapid Creek, and we've got it in Astora. It's throughout the state, and it's very interesting. This one has become distributed like that, but we haven't seen that with the water milfoil yet. Next, invertebrates, and these include, of course, zebra mussels. So this is the main issue right now in South Dakota that we're focusing on, and they call them zebra mussels because they have those alternating dark and light bands on their shell. They can grow up to an inch and a half in size, though they're often smaller. They're shaped like a D when you look at them. And an interesting thing is they're flat. If you look at the slide there on the left side of the mussel, that's actually a flat surface there. They can produce about a million offspring a year, and they can filter about a quart of water a day. Next.
Well, before I move on, back up. Which side is the hinge on?
Hinge is on the left side.
On the left side, on the flat side?
Yes, the hinge is on.
There's a hinge on the entire flat side.
Yep.
And it opens up. Okay.
Next. The slide at the top there is a newly spawned zebra mussel. They're called veligers, and they're only the diameter of a human hair. So you're not able to see them in water. They are very easy to transport in ballast tanks on wakeboard boats, in a live well, in a bait bucket. And depending on the conditions, they can survive up to 2 weeks without food. The adults, they attach onto hard surfaces mostly, though they do attach onto plants. And if you look at the red circle on the slide here, that shows what they call abyssal threads. And that's on that hinged surface again, the flat hinged surface. They put down those threads, and then they have like an epoxy that they secrete over those to hold them onto things. So very hard to get off if they're alive still. Next. I've got a series of slides here that show the spread of zebra mussels. Quagga mussels are another species of mussels in the same family as the zebra mussels. They both come from the Black and Caspian Sea in Asia, and they got here in the 1980s in the ballast water of ships, the ocean-going ships. They have to put on a bunch of water to cross the ocean to have the boats afloat properly, and then when they get into the fresh water, they're able to either exchange that or just dump that ballast water. So the zebra mussels or quagga mussels have a free ride. So I have a series of slides here that I'll be going through quickly just to show that spread, and then there'll be a slide on South Dakota that shows the distribution. So next. That's the distribution as of 2019. And then the next slide, please. This shows South Dakota and the distribution of zebra mussels in orange. Zebra mussels started out in South Dakota in the Yankton area on both Lake Lewis and Clark and below. And over time, they have moved up the system on the Missouri River system. They were in Lake Sharp and Francis Case in 2019. In 2020, we added Lakes Pickerel, Kamapeska, and Cochrane in. There's also two small lakes right by the Missouri River at the lower end. They're Lake Yankton and McCook Lake that have been invested for a few years. There's a quarry up by Aberdeen that has zebra mussels. And then this past summer, zebra mussels were discovered in Lake Mitchell. So that's the current distribution. We do not, that we know of, have zebra mussels west of the Missouri River current. And next slide. So what's the issue with zebra mussels? If you're talking about the health of an ecosystem, the natural environment, they help reduce the abundance of the native mussels. They often colonize the shells of the native mussels. They compete with those fish that eat plankton. They
do increase a water clarity, but that often means there's a more submerged aquatic plants, and they shift how nutrients are distributed from the open water to the bottom and nearer the shore. They can increase a harmful algal blooms because of that as well. An interesting thing is the impact on fisheries is less clear. There is some research that shows that in lakes with zebra mussels, as an example, the walleyes that are newly hatched will grow slower in a year, and then that would translate into the population over time not being as healthy because of that. But there aren't a lot of case issues that really show a negative impact on fisheries. Next, the main impact on zebra and quagga mussels are to surface water users. They end up on the beach either as the elevation of the water goes down or the dead shells end up on the beach. The shells are sharp, they can cut feet. They plug pipes and pumps. They foul outboard motors, and as we said before, they do colonize those native mussels as well. Next, here we have a piece of irrigation equipment from Lewis and Clark Lake that was in the water from the spring through the fall. And you can see the colonization on that after zebra mussels in that lake in Lewis and Clark had reached a level that they were really abundant and producing well. Next. So again, zebra mussels are our primary focus. Next. And the roles in aquatic invasive species management that are played in the state of South Dakota include increasing awareness, a changing behavior, monitoring, rapidly responding to new infestations if there's something that is controllable, and then mitigation. So we're really talking education and outreach for increasing awareness of the behavior. To slow the spread, you need to have boaters and other resource users not be moving water. And that's a change in behavior, and that is accomplished through engaging boaters and also regulations enforcement. The monitoring helps us stay on top of the waters that are infested so they can be dealt with and the public can be informed. And mitigation really is on life after AIS, after they're here. And the main focus there is vegetation and then addressing user impacts specifically for zebra mussels. Next. So we talk about increasing awareness, and again, in the game fish and parks, we're pretty much focused on the boaters, the water users, the shore anglers. So the target audiences with those boaters and anglers, the message we have for them is to make sure your watercraft is clean, drained, and dried every time it's used. For shore anglers, a big one is not to be transporting your bait in water from a lake, river, or stream. You can put a lot of zebra mussel veligers in a bait bucket if you're carrying it from one lake that has them to a new lake. So those are the main messages that we're focusing on awareness. The next slide. We do have an annual marketing campaign. The focus, again, of this campaign is that awareness, having the public adopt best practices to not move water and vegetation. And the tools that our department uses include social media, so both Facebook, Instagram, those types of things, YouTube videos. We have a website, sdleastwanted.sd.gov, that is the repository for the majority of the information we share on AIS. We have an active watercraft inspection program, and then we contract with an advertising company each year, Lawrence and Schiller, to help with the outreach program. Next. So if you pump gas at a gas station this year in South Dakota. There's a chance you saw the ad on the top right here featuring Benny Spies about make sure you take your bolt plug out and you clean, drain, and dry every time. Below that is something they call instant experience, where your cell phone will be pinged and you then receive either in your Facebook feed or your Instagram feed, 8 slides that go over zebra mussels. And next. A changing behavior, the number one tool we use there is our watercraft inspection stations. And the 2020 legislature granted the department a number of authorities to conduct roadside inspections, to require people to stop at them, to conduct a decontamination of a watercraft or other transports vehicle if necessary. And if we can't decontaminate it immediately, to detain that boat in order to perform that decontamination. Next.
Question.
Yes.
Does that authority exist, or is that authority that you want?
That exists. That was granted by the legislature.
And these people from the Game, Fish, and Parks have the authority to arrest people?
They have the authority to issue you a citation.
To detain with a citation?
They can detain the watercraft.
What's that mean?
That means you'd have to leave your watercraft there, and then they would decontaminate it. Some of the watercraft out there, they're from some place where there's a big infestation of zebra mussels and the boat's always in the water, it can take hours and hours to decontaminate it.
And who pays for that? The owner of the boat?
If we do it, it would be us. There are times it would be the owner of the boat who would be responsible. Next slide. The inspection process is usually about 1 to 2 minutes. It may be a little longer if it's high risk. The questions we ask are if they're from out of state or if they have used an infested body of water in the last 30 days. The inspectors will look for dirty, crusty, or slimy areas below the waterline. Is there any standing water in the boat or the ballast tanks on the boat? And if it's a complex watercraft, one that might have a multiple storage compartments of water within it, or an inboard, outboard engine, that type of thing. Next. If it's considered a high-risk boat, because two of those screening questions were positive, then they determine if decontamination is required. And last year and the year before, the percentage of a watercraft that we had to do a decontamination on was probably in the 1 to 2% at the most, and very often it was only maybe flushing the outboard motor or something like that. We have not actually, in the last 2 years that we've been actively running the program, had the need to detain a watercraft at all. Next slide. So in 2020, the watercraft inspection program we operated again, this was the spring and summer right after the legislature granted the authority for inspections, involved these locations. We had an office, or we had a crew up in Webster, one in Sioux Falls, another one down by Yankton, Chamberlain, and Pier. And then the red circles show bodies of water that we worked with the Bureau of Reclamation on to do watercraft inspections. One thing with the watercraft inspections, when we talk about changing behavior, engaging an angler one-on-one and actually getting to share with them information about aquatic invasive species and show them how their particular watercraft is able to transport them is very effective at helping to change behavior. We have the information outreach stuff that helps with the awareness on the part of people, but it's those inspections and the one-on-one that really help with the behavior. Next slide.
Wait, excuse me, question. What's the red lines in all of this particular slide?
The red lines are the roads in South Dakota, the major roads, and the blue is the bodies of water in the state.
These red lines are the highways, the roads?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, we use this slide to show how East River, there's a lot more roads, a lot more bodies of water, a lot more boat ramps and people. And in association with that, there is that greater chance to move zebra mussels and other aquatic invasive species between bodies of water. When you get out there on the western edge of the state in those Bureau of Reclamation waters, they don't have a lot of boat ramps, there aren't a lot of ways in or out. And currently, the nearest infestation to zebra mussels are the Missouri River. So here we just have the 2021 stations that we operated. We actually operated a few less stations in 2021, but we encountered a higher number of watercraft. Next. So common violations, again, the big one is really anything with retaining water, your boat plugs, your plugs in your live well, lowering and draining your outboard motor, and jet skis. A lot of owners aren't even aware they have a plug in them. Your wakeboard boats, it's on the bottom of the wakeboard boat that they often have a central plug. And then vegetation on trailers. And as I stated earlier, there are times where zebra mussels will hitch a ride on plants that are on the trailer rather than actually being attached onto your watercraft. The number of inspections, again, in 2020 was slightly over 9,000. This last year, we did 14,000. The next slide. A part of changing behavior, of course, is the enforcement of regulations. And we have a law enforcement database in Game Fish and Parks that's able to track the times when a warning was issued or a citation. And here we have the information for 2021. A lot of the East River citations and warnings are on your main travel corridors. And as you go West River, you see that the inspections were conducted specifically at access areas. And that's the place also that you had the violations. There were 232 citations issued and an additional 171 warnings that were issued this year, which is about the same number we had the previous year. Next. So monitoring is another one of those five roles we talked about. Every boat dock that is pulled, every boat fishing pier that's pulled, they're inspected for zebra mussels. We have settlement samplers, like in the lower left in this slide, that we have out in lakes to see if there are zebra mussels, and then if there are, we're able to quantify the number per square foot, if you will, by how high the colonization is. And then on the right side there, we have a piece of PVC pipe that we use for citizen science monitoring. That's something we've started a few years ago, but we're increasing over time with the lake associations. Next. Really the biggest thing after you get zebra mussels is mitigation. And here you can see top left, you have a float from a boat dock. Top right, you have a pipe that's completely clogged with mussels, either at a water plant or at a Corps of Engineers facility. The lower right, I believe, is a filter area that's completely clogged with zebra mussels. Then the lower left, you have some irrigation equipment, again, with zebra mussels on it. So after we have them, the big thing is, how do you live with them? How do you mitigate those impacts? Next slide. In 2018, December of that year, we had a summit in Yankton for surface water users about how do you do that? How do you mitigate impacts? And we have some expertise in our state. And now that we have infestations, especially lower in Missouri River, but we also had experts from Fish and Wildlife Service and Bureau of Reclamation there to help with that. Next slide. And it was very well attended by staff with Environment and Natural Resources as well. They probably never knew I took their picture. but we haven't captured, so they were there. And next slide. We also have been reaching out to lake associations, the ones that have a distribution list that they're able to use to distribute materials. It's been very beneficial for us. Big thing there is, you know, one, how do you protect your lake from getting zebra mussels? And number two, how do you keep them off your watercraft after they're in your lake? So we have been working on outreach there with lake associations. So the next slide. So partnering, again, Fish and Parks, most of the information and the activities I showed today are things that Game Fish and Parks does. We do partner with other state agencies. Environment and Natural Resources was very quick to add in a copper solution as an aquatic pesticide under a general permit that has allowed entities to treat their pipes to keep zebra mussels out of them. The Corps of Engineers, I believe, was the first one that pursued that. That helps provide a tool for water users to be able to keep their equipment clean. A temporary water rights, whenever they're issued, there's a statement in there about moving water and aquatic invasive species. Some things that we could certainly use assistance with from Environment and Natural Resources. Sorry, back up. Agriculture and Natural Resources. is outreach. As an example there, Game Fish and Parks has the emails of the anglers, but we don't have contact information for the surface water users, the irrigators and people like that. So just to work to help to share information there. Mitigation and training. Again, that one is really focused towards surface water users. We'd be very happy to partner on anything like that. Monitoring, Agriculture and Natural Resources has crews out all the time. They've been very helpful with detecting new infestations. And then funding, and there, or Game Fish and Parks understands the sources of funding we usually have available, like Fish and Wildlife Service, and we have been fortunate enough to partner with the Bureau of Reclamation financially on their waters. And there might be some money from the Corps of Engineers that will begin to become available. But we don't really know of what's available through ag and natural resource channels for possible grant fundings or other things. So, next slide. And that's all I have this afternoon to share with you. I'd be happy to entertain any questions you might have or...
Thank you. I think this is a much bigger issue than a Game Fish and Parks issue. This is a South Dakota tourism issue. This is a water, clean water issue. This is a natural resource issue. And those folks that go from not being aware of zebra mussels to cutting their feet every time they get in a lake that's filled with zebra mussels, the recognition comes pretty quickly. Tuesday in Webster, there was about 39, 40 people that gathered all across Northeast South Dakota and the various lake associations to talk about the issues and the problems and ways to slow the spread. Probably is not a way to stop the spread, but to slow the spread. In Enemy Swim this year, they did 1,700 boat inspections at the ramp. Educating people on and off. I think when we look at what's happening with the irrigation and with our large water systems that pull money out of the Missouri River, this is only the start of the problems that they're going to have as it becomes worse and worse. We had a person from the University of Minnesota that was presenting on Tuesday that talked about the promising effect at some genetic changes that can be made with zebra mussels. And she talked about the fact that it does not, would not kill the adult mussels, but rather it would just kill the villagers that are in the waters. But it's just up to 160 acres is all they've treated at this point in time with it. But I think this is something that, that our organization should look at and to see what could be available as we look to expand the awareness and also perhaps find some funding to assist in what's being done in South Dakota to slow the spread of zebra mussels. John, I thank you for your time.
Certainly. Thank you for the opportunity to share information.
You bet.
Thanks, John.
Item number 7 on the agenda, amendments to the state water plan. Tyler.
Good afternoon, Chairman Zuckel, members of the board. Water projects which will require state funding or need state support for categorical grant or loan funding need to be on the state water plan. The Board of Water and Natural Resources annually approves projects for placement onto the state water facility plan and provides amendments of projects on the plan on a quarterly basis. Placement of a project on the state water plan by the board provides no guarantee of funding. The project placed onto the plan at this meeting will remain on the facility plan through December of 2022. Seeking a clean water or drinking water state revolving fund loan must be included on the project priority list of the intended use plan. The state water plan applications are used to determine which project should be amended onto the state revolving fund project priority lists. There were 8 state water plan applications received by August 1st, 2021 deadline, as shown on the map on the screen. As I present the applications, I will also identify those projects to be placed on the clean water SRF and drinking water SRF project priority lists. The first application is from Apple Springs Sanitary District. Apple Springs Sanitary District requested placement onto the facility plan to purchase and assume operation of the existing water supply and distribution system that serves the Apple Springs subdivision. The total project cost is estimated to be $643,000. This project will not be eligible to be placed on the drinking water SRF intended use plan. Apple Springs Sanitary District also requested placement onto the facilities plan to purchase and assume operation of the existing wastewater collection and treatment system that serves the Apple Springs subdivision. Total project cost estimated at $1,319,000. This project is also not eligible to be placed on the Clean Water SRF Intended Use Plan. The next application is from Aurora Rural Rural Water System. Aurora Rural Rural Water System requested placement onto the facilities plan to install 10 miles of new parallel water main, construct a new storage reservoir, loop multiple portions of the system, construct a booster station, and demolish a water tower and booster station that are beyond their useful life. Total project cost is estimated at $4,170,000. The project will be placed on the drinking water intended use plan with 46 project points. Estimated loan is $4,170,000 at 1.625% interest for 30 years. The next project is from Fox Elder. Fox Elder requested placement onto the facilities plan to replace the existing water tower and with a new 1.5 million gallon water tower. Total project cost is estimated at $1,700,000. The project will be placed on the drinking water intended use plan with 22 project points. Estimated loan is $1,700,000 at 1.625% interest for 30 years. Fox Elder also requested placement onto the facilities plan to construct a new supply well, storage reservoir, and associated piping to provide adequate supply. Total project cost estimated at $4,129,600. The project will be placed on the intended use plan with 22 project points. Estimated loan is $4,129,600 at 1.625% interest for 30 years. Fox Elder also submitted a request for placement on the facilities plan to install approximately 3,200 feet of water main, equalize pressure, and provide looping in the system. Total project cost is $670,400. The project will be placed on the drinking water intended use plan with 17 project points. Estimated loan is $670,400 at 1.625% interest for 30 years. Fox Elder also requested placement on the facility plan to install approximately 16,500 feet of sewer truck main to provide service to 870 acres of new development. This project is in preparation of the Ellsworth Air Force Base expansion, which are bringing estimated 3,100 people to the area. Total project cost is estimated at $1,800,000. The project will be placed on the clean water intended use plan with 9 priority points. Estimated loan is $1,800,000 with 2.125% interest for 30 years. The last application is from Timber Lake. Timber Lake requested placement on the facilities plan to clean and televise the entire collection system and replace or reline approximately 16,400 feet of sewer lines, manholes, and related appurtenances throughout the city. Total project costs are $3,513,400. The project will be placed on the clean water intended use plan with 7 priority points. Estimated loan is $3,513,400 at 2.125% interest for 30 years. Now, I'd like to remind the board that 3 separate motions are required for amending the state water plan, the 2021 drinking water intended use plan, and the 2021 clean water intended use plan. Staff recommendation is to amend all 8 of the projects onto the state water facilities plan.
So moved, Gunnerk.
Second, Lanning.
Am I jumping the bug yet?
We need 3 separate motions.
That is correct. One is required for the state water facilities plan, one is required for the drinking water intended use plan, and one is required for the clean water intended use plan.
Okay, so the first motion is to approve the...
Approve all 8 of the project listed onto the state water facilities plan.
Okay, we're looking for a motion to do that.
I make the motion. Paul Gunnerk.
A motion. Is there a second?
Second, Lanning.
A motion has been made and seconded. All in favor with an aye, opposed, nay. Brenda, please call the roll.
Bernhard?
Aye.
Gunnerk?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Lanning?
Aye.
Newman?
Aye.
Soho?
Aye. Motion carried. Now we're looking for the second motion, and that is to do...
Staff recommendation for the addition of both projects shown on the screen on the project priority list of the Clean Water SRF intended use plan.
Bernhard, but so moved.
Second.
Second, Jones.
A motion has been made and seconded. Is there any additional discussion? Hearing none, all in favor with an aye, opposed, nay. Brenda, please call the roll.
Bernhard?
Aye.
Gunnerk?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Lanning?
Aye.
Newman?
Aye.
Soho.
Aye. Motion carried. Now we're looking for the motion to...
The last recommendation is for the addition of all 4 projects shown on the screen onto the project priority list of the drinking water SRF intended use plan.
Do we have a motion?
So moved, Gunnerk.
Second, Lanning.
A motion has been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor with an aye, opposed, nay. Brenda, please call the roll.
Bernhard?
Aye.
Gunnerk?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Lanning?
Aye.
Newman?
Aye.
Soho?
Aye. Motion carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tyler. Item number 8, sanitary storm sewer facilities funding applications. Mike.
Chair Cole, members of the board, there's one application for you to act on today. And that is a request from Sioux Falls for $87.5 million. This would be the 3rd of 4 loans to fund their rehabilitation of their water reclamation facility. Due to all the things that are going on in the marketplace, the water reclamation upgrades project is experiencing some quite substantial cost increases due to related to construction and material pricing. The cost of the project has increased from $159 million to $194.5 million, so a substantial increase expected there. The city contacted Andy and I and asked if they want to get the money in place by the end of the year and ask for their options. So Sioux Falls has asked us to defer this application at this time, and they will be submitting an application for the increased amount, and they would like us to take that up at the November meeting. And so the staff recommendation is to defer action on this application to the November 4th meeting as requested by Sioux Falls.
At that meeting, they will have some of their representatives to explain if we have questions.
Yes, they will probably be on online rather than but we will have somebody there to talk about that.
Looking for a motion to approve staff recommendation.
So moved, Bernhard.
Second, Gennard.
A motion has been made and seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, aye. Opposed, nay. Brenda, please call the roll.
Bernhard.
Aye.
Gennard.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Lanning.
Aye.
Newman.
Aye.
Sobel.
Aye.
Motion carried. Item number 9, Solid Waste Management Program funding applications. Tyler.
Chairman Sobel, members of the board. I would like to go over the dedicated solid waste management funds that are available for award. Including recent reversions, there are approximately $1,860,573 available for award, and that information can be seen on the screen. The Department of Agriculture and Natural Resources received 2 applications for solid waste management program funding by the July 1st deadline, and the locations of those applicants can be seen on the screen. Because this is a Monday meeting, I would ask that the board take action on the applications at the time they are presented. The first application is from the City of Brookings. Brookings is requesting funding to develop a solid waste master plan. The master plan will be used as a roadmap for successful long-term solid waste management. If funded, Brookings anticipates beginning development of the master plan in fall of 2021 with a completion date of December 2022. Total project cost is $248,000. Funding requested is $198,400. Staff recommendation is to award a solid waste management program grant at 25% based on project cost of $248,000, not to exceed $62,000. For non-recycling related projects, grant awards have historically been between the 15 to 25% price range for total project costs. Brookings has indicated that they are not interested in a solid waste management program loan to fund their remainder project costs. If there are any questions, I will leave representatives from Brookings are present to answer them.
Do you have any questions?
Who's going to answer the questions?
There's somebody from Brookings online. I can let us answer them.
Let's know anybody there. So we're looking for a motion to follow staff recommendation with this project. Is that what we're looking for right now?
That's correct.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
So moved, Jones.
Second, Newman.
A motion has been made and seconded. Is there any additional discussion? Hearing none, all in favor with an aye. Opposed, nay. Brenda, please call the roll.
Bernhard.
Aye.
Gennard.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Lanning.
Aye.
Newman.
Aye.
Sobel.
Aye. Motion carried. Tyler.
The next application is from Roberts County. Roberts County is requesting funding for a proposed landfill expansion project. The proposed project will entail construction of a new landfill cell 3 and add additional disposal space to landfill cell 1. If funded, Roberts County began construction in July of 2021 and anticipates completion in early October of this year. Total project cost is $457,000. Funding requested is $228,500. Staff recommendation is to award a solid waste management program grant at 25% based on project cost of $547,000, not to exceed $114,250. For landfill projects and equipment purchases, grant awards have historically been between 15 to 25% of total project costs. Roberts County indicated they are not interested in a solid waste management program loan to fund the remainder of the project costs. And if there are any questions, either representatives from Roberts County or I can answer them.
Who's answering? Where's the answering coming from? Is that it?
Any representatives from Roberts County online?
Jones? Nobody's in. What's the projected? I want to know what the projected lifetime of this is by adding a. Between the additional disposal space and the new waste sale. That'll take you out to how many years?
given to the additional one.
I can't answer.
I don't remember the exact specifics. You know, everything's based on projected tonnage, fill rates. Typically, most landfill cells, they're trying to construct them for a 5 to 10 year life expectancy to become full or needing to construct that next cell. Landfill cells are always a little difficult because of the way they nest together within each other on the filling and going above grade. You can only fill one cell so much before you need to construct that next cell. So what might have 10 to 15 years worth of total volume disposal, you may see a new cell needing to be built every 5 to 10 years because you can't access that full volume without having the cell next to it to go up above grade and get to your ultimate height.
So did the applicant know that this project was coming up for discussion today?
Yes, they did.
Did they know that?
Did we send out agenda letters?
I don't know if we did or not.
We may not have sent out agenda letters this time. I don't know. I've been gone for a while. But I assume you may have talked to them. I mean, I don't know. I don't know, Dr. Gennert. We usually send out letters to the applicants notifying them. I do not believe that happened this time.
Well, I have a hard time approving things that I can't talk to the people that are submitting the information, the application, you know?
Well, then you have the option to defer the application.
To defer? To defer the application?
Or should we call Randy?
Pardon?
Or should we call Randy?
I guess that wouldn't be my choice, but,
you know, one issue with this cell is that they're moving along very quickly on this one because they were near the end of their life and out of capacity as it was. So this cell is actually underway as we speak because of the time frames. Not sure. Give me a second here to pull up the application itself.
This is Jackie Lanning. Is the applicant aware that the award is for 25% and not the full amount requested?
No, they are not. We do not release the staff recommendation until the board meeting.
One thing we do, Jackie, always when we see these applications come in with a higher grant amount being requested, is we tip and no loan in their application. They didn't check anything for requesting loan money. We typically reach out to them and confirm that they have no interest in a loan and have the local cash to support the project if they would not receive a full grant. I believe we did that in this case, and we also looked at their financial information that they submitted, and it supported that, you know, they would have the ability to fund the remainder of this project should they choose to.
Okay, thank you.
Would you like us to try and call the
Let's move on. It bothers me. Let's move on. I think these people, you know, spend time going through this, study all this, and then nobody shows up to defend it or anything like that. I have a hard time with that. You know that, Michael. From years.
Oh.
I
will take full responsibility for that because I dropped the ball on sending out letters to the applicants. So, and again, I apologize. I was out all of last week and it just totally slipped my mind.
I know, you were out of the office. I understand that.
Slipped my mind also, so.
Yep, well,
So, as far as moving forward with this, do we wish to move forward?
Years must be back. I guess with Roberts County under construction, my preference would not be to defer it. You obviously have that option, but I mean, they are moving forward with construction right now, so I'm sure that any money would be appreciated.
Okay, so at this time, we're looking for a motion to follow staff recommendation. Do we have that motion?
So moved, Bernhard.
Second, Jones.
A motion has been made and seconded. Is there any additional discussion? Hearing none. All in favor with an aye, opposed, nay. Brenda, please call the roll.
Bernhard?
Aye.
Gunnar?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Lanning?
Aye.
Newman?
Aye.
Sobel?
Aye. Motion carried. Thank you.
Before we move on, Chairman Sobel, I would like to recap the funded solid waste management program. Taking a look again at the remaining funds in the solid waste management program, after today's recommendations, which total $176,350, there's a little under $1.7 million remaining in the program. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tyler. Item number 10, Drinking Water State Revolving Fund Program Small System Technical Assistance Request. Mike.
Chairman Sobel, members of the board. We currently have a contract with the South Dakota Association of Rural Water Systems to provide technical assistance to small systems, and that contract expires at the end of the year. Some of the things that the South Dakota Association of Rural Water Systems does for us on these things is they go out and do leak detections for the small systems. They help them with some of the vulnerability assessment plans, help them just general maintenance on the water system and operational type things are a real boom. And when they say small systems, it's like an awesome again, their contract is expired at the end of the year by state bid law. Because the services for this exceed $50,000, we are required to go through the request for proposal process. So in your board packet was the request for proposal that will be distributed. The schedule for that is to get the RFP advertisement out. I said October 4th, but Andy and I are both going to be gone next week, so I may try to get it out tomorrow, or I may go out a couple of days later. We will ask that the proposals be due by October 22nd this year, and then at the November 4th board meeting, we'll bring our recommendation in front of the board for their approval, and then the contract will be executed January 1st. Staff recommendation is to authorize distribution of the request for proposals to provide small system technical assistance for the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund program.
Thank you. We're looking for a motion to authorize distribution of the request for proposal.
So moved, Lanning.
Second, Jones.
A motion has been made and seconded. Is there any additional discussion? Hearing none, all in favor with an aye, opposed, nay. Brenda, please call the roll.
Bernhard?
Aye.
Gunnar?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Lanning?
Aye.
Newman? Newman?
Sorry, aye.
Sobel?
Aye. Motion carried. Item number 11.
Excuse me, I need to ask Michael one question. Have you read through the proposal, what they have here? It's item 1, period 12, restriction of boycott of Israel. What's that all about?
It's a state executive.
It's a state executive order that was put in place recently, within maybe the last year and a half, that we cannot buy products or support from other foreign companies or foreign lands that don't support Israel.
It's required of all state contracts.
All state contracts. It's required to be put in all state contracts.
There you go.
Thank you, Michael.
That's something I just made up on.
Yeah, go Packers or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Item number 11, state fiscal year 2021 state revolving fund.
Thank you, Chairman Sobel, members of the board.
Every year, the South Dakota Conservancy District is required to present an annual report to the Legislature's Interim Bonding Review Committee. In this meeting, and they usually have a meeting in November. So for the past several years, we have the report that has been put in front of you that was in your board packet. It's kind of a combined report that we put together based on the state fiscal year. This report has been well received by the Interim Bond Commission or committee. So it looks a lot similar, real similar to what we've done in the last few years. I would note that the report that was included in your board packet did not include the financial statements, but those were sent separately via email earlier this week. I hope that you were able to receive those, and if you didn't, we will make sure we can get a copy to you today. The staff recommendation is to approve the state fiscal year 2021 state revolving funds report to the Interim Bonding Review Committee and authorize distribution of the report.
Do we have a motion?
So moved, Bernhardt.
Second, Gennerick.
A motion has been made and seconded to follow this. Is there any additional discussion?
Well, let me ask the question. All the blank pages are going to be filled in when this is published?
They were. That's what was sent to you via email.
He's got a copy of the version.
That's the financial statement.
It was sent
for email.
Yeah.
Brenda gave you a copy right before the meeting.
Well, I haven't destroyed it, I'm sure. Okay.
Can you look at this one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is that mine or is that?
Well, I'll get you another one.
Okay, gotcha. So this, okay. This fills out the report then.
That completes the blank pages in the financial statement. Yes. They're still working on them when we wanted to send the draft out. It's a tedious process getting these financial statements.
Well, I admire your patience to put something like this together and the hours it takes to cross-check and all the rest for all the numbers and everything. It's a Herculean effort, in my estimation. I don't know, do you ever get any comments?
You know, when we go in front of the Interim Bonding Commission, there's a few questions. I mean, have we had any defaults? Sometimes they kind of get into the weeds on some of the projects. their questions are pretty minimal. Whatever they ask, we've been able to answer, and they move on. We're over there about 5 minutes usually.
Good. Any additional comment or question? Hearing none, all in favor with an aye, opposed nay. Brenda, please call the roll.
Bernhard?
Aye.
Gunnar?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Manning?
Aye.
Newman?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Next item on the agenda is the election of Board of Water and Natural Resources officers for the time period of September 21st to September, from September 2021 to September 2022. I declare the floor is now open for nominations.
Mr. Chair, I nominate the following slate of officers for consideration by this board. Jerry Soholt as the chair, Gene Jones Jr. as the vice chair, and Todd Bernhardt as the secretary.
Are there any other nominations from the floor? Hearing no further nominations, I decree that the floor is now closed to nominations, that we move forward to the election process. Do I hear a motion?
I make the motion. Go ahead, Jackie.
I'll move to accept the board slate as presented. Lanning.
I second the motion.
A motion has been made and seconded. Brenda, please call the roll. And an aye is approval of the motion, nay is a disapproval of the motion.
Bernhard?
Aye.
Gennert?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
Lanning?
Aye.
Newman?
Aye.
Soholt?
Aye. Motion is passed.
congratulations or condolences to the board members so elected. Thus, the election of Board of Water Natural Resources officers for the next 12 years is complete.
You know, that's on the record.
Oh, I do know that. I am aware. Item 13.
Pull that presentation. Well, it's my first time in front of board today, so hello. on the screen here, we're pulling up, and many of the board members, we gave you an advanced copy here so you can follow along on it. It is a presentation that Mike and I are going to give you on what is known as the American Rescue Plan Act. Many of you have probably heard of it, maybe not in that terminology, but this is the, for lack of better terms, COVID money that was passed in March of 2021. So Mike and I are going to kind of give you a little overview of where that impacts this board potentially and water and sewer funding as a whole. So here, we can go to the next slide. So a little overview, kind of explain the ARPA, talk about water and wastewater eligibilities in general. Mike's going to talk some about the comparison between the ARPA and our clean water and drinking water SRF programs, some of the unknowns that we have out there, and our general state water plan process and timelines, just to kind of give the board an overview of what we're seeing, what we're hearing. So, next slide, Drew. So, ARPA recipients, all states were provided money. I believe it primarily on a population basis, but there may have been some other criteria in there too. South Dakota's portion of that was a state that they retained to divvy out through legislative process, which Representative Weisgram will be part of, is $975 million. The counties received a direct allocation from U.S. Treasury. In South Dakota, that total was $172 million, and this was basically population-based. Metropolitan cities, which is those in the federal level defined as those over 50,000 population, also received a direct allocation of funds. So Sioux Falls and Rapid City both received a direct allocation as shown in the presentation. Non-metropolitan cities will also all receive an allocation of funds. That money first came to the states, and the states had to put a formula together to disperse that money out to those non-metropolitan communities. That is being done, is in the process, and so that total of $62 million is being dispersed throughout the rest of the remaining cities, municipalities in the state. Tribal governments and territories also received a portion of funding. Group, next slide. So there's six primary categories of ARPA eligibility. I'm not going to dwell on all but one of them because I'm by no means an expert in any of them except for when we get to water and sewer infrastructure. So we'll just kind of go over the high level support public health response. This is, you know, funding COVID-19 mitigation efforts, medical expenses, behavioral health care, certain public health safety staff. There's probably some things that can be done with funds in that framework. I don't really know what the plans are for that, but probably some eligibilities. Addressing negative economic impacts, so responding to economic harms to workers, families, small businesses, impacted industries in the public sector. Again, maybe some ability to use some of the funds for that, but a lot of these first few are kind of ambiguous in what's required and what's allowed. Replacing public sector revenue loss, I guess however you want to look at it, thankfully or unthankfully, in South Dakota, we did not have public sector revenue loss pretty much anywhere. We weathered that storm well, and so that really isn't going to be an option for
use of these funds, is my understanding. So I premium pay for essential workers, so offering some sort of additional payment to workers who were part of the frontline critical infrastructure. I believe that's allowed and maybe done in some cases. To what extent, I'm not sure. I'll skip down to the bottom one, broadband infrastructure. Sounds very broad. I do know, at least from general discussion and stuff, that it's not all broadband. No matter what the conditions are, there are some limitations as to what the broadband money can be used for. Then last is water and sewer infrastructure. So making necessary investments to improve access to clean water and invest in wastewater, clean drinking water, and invest in wastewater and stormwater infrastructure. So we're going to spend most of our focus on that because that's what we do. That's what this board helps with, and that's what Mike and I know about. water and wastewater project eligibility. So what is in the current ARPA Treasury guidance is that projects that are eligible for water and sewer infrastructure funding are those that are eligible projects in the Clean Water and Drinking Water State Revolving Fund programs. So another reason that DANR and this your staff here is very much involved in this, because from a SRF standpoint, we're kind of the experts in the state on what's eligible and what's able to be funded. You can go to the next one, Drew. So many of the members of this board will know this, but just kind of to rehash, you know, what are some of those SRF project eligibilities? On the clean water SRF side, that would be all publicly owned wastewater treatment and conveyance, which we do a vast majority of our funding on the clean water side. Stormwater, in certain instances, we certainly do some of that. Non-point source pollution, also known as the Section 319 program, things like bank stabilization, certain components of landfill projects, agricultural BMPs, you know, this is things that we certainly have funded through this board, supported some of our non-point source incentive rate financing when we fund projects. Sioux Falls and Mitchell and Del Rapids have kind of the most recent communities doing that. Those projects, typically we're funding them as kind of that incentive rate. These would be eligible for direct ARPA allocations as well. Drainage and flood control projects are ineligible. That's something, every time we get a stormwater project, we have to look at it kind of close and see if we're doing stormwater management and conveyance or drainage and flood control. I think many of the consultants kind of understand that around the state too, so we don't have too many issues with that, but every once in a while we have to kind of talk through that. Drinking water side, most water storage, water treatment and distribution, source water development, does need to be primarily for domestic use, not for primarily industrial use. The biggest caveat on the drinking water side is that we can't fund projects primarily for future growth or fire protection. Now, we certainly do fund some projects that incorporate future growth or fire protection, but the basis for those projects is the Public Health and Safety Need Safe Drinking Water Act. So, you know, if we're putting in a new storage tank for a community, we need to be able to show that, you know, they have an aging infrastructure storage tank that needs to be replaced, that they have inadequate storage for the needs to support daily domestic use, or that they have a pressure problem and that a new storage would facilitate that. So we can, once we reach that, you know, if they need a 100,000-gallon tank, but to provide some reasonable future growth or reasonable fire protection, we can allow them to upsize beyond that. Similar, you know, a lot of times, the housing developments as an example, we can't run water lines in a housing development that's not constructed. If it's just, you know, greenfield construction and they're planning to do a development, we can't go and put water lines in there. What we can do is if there's a project that the city needs adjacent to a development area and say they have a 4-inch line right now or no line in that area, and they need to improve water quality throughout the rest of their distribution system, replace that existing age line, or put a looped line in there to loop the water system and not have some dead ends, we can allow them, when we go by where that proposed future development is, to put in the necessary valves and fittings and stub out a pipe out of the right-of-way, so we're not going back into a street a year or 2 years later and, you know, cutting up a brand new street and brand new piping to put in those fittings. So, you know, we allow some reasonableness on it, but we have to kind of be careful.
Is that the question with regard to what you just said, does this eliminate Box Elder from the new developments, from what they have for the airplane coming in and all the rest?
It doesn't eliminate Box Elder. So the applications they placed on the state water plan today and that were placed on the intended use plan, we've looked at all of those, and all of those are to support both current needs as well as do some planning for some future growth. But it does have limitations as to, yeah, we can't, you know, if they're saying, well, you know, we've got a brand new development going in this part of town, we can't go and run the water lines through that development. That same stipulation does not apply on the clean water SRF site. We can run sanitary sewer lines through those areas.
That was what that application was for.
Yeah. Was it a sanitary sewer that was doing that? So yeah, so the sanitary sewer side, we are able to do that. It's a difference between the two programs. It's a difference at the federal level they were originally authorized, and something that has stayed with, and we haven't seen any movement on that, but it's definitely a unique difference, and sometimes creates some interesting challenges and some explaining on our end of, well, you can do this, but you can't do this, even though they're in the exact same spot. All right, so this is a slide more for anybody interested. EPA has put together some eligibility handbooks that are out there, and we included these links. We've been giving this presentation to a few different groups, so this is out there for other people to be able to access those eligibility handbooks. They're fairly normal person speak and give nice normal examples so that people can actually read and understand what they're talking about. And in many cases, it's not all federal regulation jargon that can be kind of hard to understand. The other thing that we've included is a link to the U.S. Treasury American Rescue Plan Resources website. This has information for their interim final rule, their FAQs, other guidance documents that are out there, and I've been trying to make sure people are aware that that's out there too, because there's a lot of good information as far as we're learning what's required in the American Rescue Plan. That's where I'm going to find out that information too. So with that, I'm going to let Mike come up, and he's going to talk a little bit more about a few things.
So again, the American Rescue Plan kind of modeled off our state revolving fund program, but there are a few differences. The similarities are that the project eligibilities are identical, so it's got to be in the clean water side, it's got to be a publicly owned treatment works, and so there's going to be some state facilities are going to probably benefit from this, and the fact that, you know, some of the campuses need some new water lines or some sewer lines or have some stormwater issues that they need to be addressed. Because those would be technically publicly owned, we can do those type of things. The American Rescue Plan does have some contractor procurement requirements, so state bid law will be required on this. In our SRF program, we have an American Iron and Steel provision, and that is required. In the American Rescue Plan, it says it's preferred that you use American Iron and Steel. So the wage rate requirements is kind of a little bit different. Our SRF is required to do Davis-Bacon wage rates, have those wage rates in them. In the American Rescue Plan, it says it's strongly encouraged to use some sort of a wage determination requirement. Now, for those states that have similar things to Davis-Bacon state wage rates, they can use those. South Dakota doesn't have that. Andy and I kind of have differing opinions with other people. They're strongly encouraged. Does that mean they're required? Or do they just mean if you don't do it, you won't get the slap on the wrist? I don't know, and I can't. It's gonna be interesting to see. There are some differences, though, in the eligible recipients. There's really no limitations in the ARP, where we do have some limitations in our programs, that it's got to be some unit of government or a nonprofit corporation in the case of rural water systems. The American Rescue Plan also requires engineering procurement, which means that if you're going to have a project that has all ARP money in it, you're going to have to go out for a request for proposal to hire an engineer, and it can't be price-based, it's got to be qualification-based. That's not going to be very, helpful to the communities, or are they going to like to do it, because a lot of communities have an engineer that they've built a relationship with forever and ever, and they want to use that. So they're basically going, a lot of times will be going through a shell game to do this. The one thing I think, at least through our money, is, or through the programs that come through this board, is there's going to be an SRF component to it. So I think we can, I shouldn't say all of them, but 95% or more of the projects are probably going to have an SRF component. What we can do to skirt that requirement is make sure that whatever engineering we pay for, we only use the state revolving fund money and don't use any of the American Rescue Plan. So I think we can get around that somewhat. And there's no environmental reviews required with the American Rescue Plan, where we are required in our SRF programs. And then the last thing, these American Rescue Plans are all grant funds. There's no loans. It's 100% grant funds. So, go to the next slide. Here's some of the important dates, I guess. Any costs incurred prior to March 3rd of 2021 are not eligible. And then the funds must be obligated by December 31st of 2024. And funds must be fully spent by December 31st of 2026. Here's, I guess, talk about a little bit of the unknowns. The timing of it, I think we got a little bit better handle on the timing. The state does have, my understanding is, they do have the funds in place, or at least half of the funds have been delivered to the states, and the second half will be delivered in, what, August of next year. So the funds are available, but I guess what we're a little could be uncertain about is, how are these funds going to be distributed? The department's preference is to go through the state water planning process, just like we do with our consolidated programs, and go through the Board of Water and Natural Resources. But again, because this will have to go through the legislature, there is the possibility that there could be some direct legislative appropriation. The amount of funds for available for water and wastewater projects is a big unknown, and kind of something that Andy and I kind of struggle with. As Andy said, there's $975 million available to the state. Some of those eligibilities are maybe a little bit limited, and how much that will go to is unsure. Do we get $50 million, or do we get $500 or $600 million or more? I guess that affects how we're going to, the recommendations we're going to be making to the board, and we have a lot of projects coming in for the state water plan next at our November meeting. I can't hazard to guess how many state water plan applications.
It changes by the minute.
It changes by the minute. The applications are due. They have to be postmarked tomorrow. So come next week, we'll know how many we have. One of the other unknowns that we talked about is the use of funding by counties. Again, you know, they can use some of it for their frontline workers or some of those other eligibilities, but you know, you really look at counties and what are their big ticket items for counties? Roads, bridges, jails, and drainage. None of that is eligible for any of those American Rescue Plan funds. So I guess what Andy and I have been kind of promoting is that maybe the rural water systems could benefit from some of those funds that go to the counties. As, you know, the city's got theirs cut, but the rural water systems really didn't get anything out of this. So we just thought it might be more palatable for a county to help a rural water system and kind of spread that across the county rather than giving it to a city that already has some funds available. My concern with that is, though, is that the counties are going to want to hold on to that money as tight as they can for as long as they can, and then we're going to be under some deadline.
So, is that money, can that money be used for roads?
No.
That's a big kicker, you know, like Meade County, the largest county in the state, amount of roads and everything else, and keeping track of them, that's a big item.
You put a sewer line under there, we can repair it. Right back to the condition.
It's got to go to somewhere, though.
The question is, if you think, what... I'm trying to, in my own mind, what that money could be used for in Meade County.
Nothing, other than some of those other eligibilities, supplement or money to the frontline workers, maybe some small businesses that had some economic impacts, they could do that. Maybe broadband, probably not, but maybe, I don't know. But again, the county's big ticket items, roads, bridges, jails, you can't use any money for that.
But they could give the money to water projects that within the county.
To water projects. So yeah, Meade County could give their money to Fairview Valley for some project.
Or Viewfield.
Yeah. They could. That would be a possibility.
I would have a hard time believing that would be done, but I'm.
Like
you always
said, I think they're going to hold on to it as tight as they can for as long as they can.
That's right.
Trying to find.
So the question is, if they get the money and they invest, put that money in bonds or something, do they get the interest that comes from that money? Does that fall under the same guidelines?
That I don't know.
Because what will happen?
There's some very specific guidelines as to what they can and can't do and the interest they can earn and how that all has to be accounted for and what you can use. I think there is some ability, though, to earn interest on it and use that for other purposes.
Yeah.
I can't say that 100% for sure, but there's about 70 pages of guidance out there, and some of that discusses the, you know, what you can use and where you can park the money. I honestly hasn't been a real focus of mine. I've seen it, but since we're not going to be parking any of the money at this agency level, it hasn't been something we've really delved into.
So we probably could expect some application for riparian buffers and Big Sioux water projects and miscellaneous things.
Very well could.
Yep.
I guess one of the other real unknowns with us is the contractor and the material availability. You have all this money pumped into the state. We don't have enough contractors to do that kind of work. And in fact, right now this year we're having, I mean, a lot of projects that went to bid might only get one bid, two bids, and I think we've had a few that didn't get any bids just because the contractors are having trouble keeping full staff. I think Andy talked to somebody or one of the engineers said they'd love to run two crews, but they can't find the people for two crews. They're lucky to find one crew. And material availability, PVC is scarce right now. It is hard to get, and you get locked into a price for PVC, and all of a sudden the price jumps up. And that's kind of what happened with Sioux Falls. So I was following a truck yesterday, you and I, that was a truck and a buff with the PVC. I thought maybe I should just hijack it and sell it for some pretty good money.
Yeah. Is that a motion?
I mean, that's really going to be interesting to see if we have enough contractors and materials available. Drew, slide. So Again, I mentioned this before, we'd like to use the normal state water plan process for these funds, and that's our department secretary is promoting that. We are telling again projects that to expect an SRF loan as part of the package. There's it would be, there might be a rare instance or two where they get a lot of 100% grant funds, but it's going to have to be something out of the ordinary. You know, again, Andy and I have talked about if we get $500-600 million, maybe we do like we did back in the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act time of 2009, where at that point in time, anybody that came in, we just gave them a flat 10% and said as principal forgiveness and kind of an incentive to give people in at that time. And we got 30, at that time, we thought we got a lot of money. We got $39 million for both programs, and we were worried about getting it out, and now we're talking maybe hundreds of millions of dollars, and yeah, it's going to be crazy. And we've also talked about maybe some of the projects that we funded this year to go back and give some for those projects that didn't get any or much subsidy, maybe backfill them with a little bit of grant funds too. But again, that depends on if we get $50 million or $500 million. I don't know that I wanted to kind of threw this in there for some of our other people that we give, but again, people have to be on the state water plan, going through our state funding process. It's a one-page application form, does require some sort of a preliminary engineering report. We've probably been a little more flexible on that this year than we have in the past, because people want to try and get in and get that money. Drew, next slide. So again, tomorrow is the deadline for October 1st. That would get the state water plan applications in front of you in November, and then they would be eligible to apply for funding in January 1st, and then funding awards generally at our March meeting. But I don't know, Andy and I are talking about maybe a June meeting instead, just to try and get our heads around what. Going to be available. I guess people have asked, you know, how much should we apply? How much should we, what projects should we try and bite off? And I guess here's what Andy and I have kind of been telling them, you know, think big, but don't think too big, because we don't want this to blow up in our face, and it very well could. I also wanted to mention that I just thought of another skill. Questions. I mean, this is a lot to delve into. Oh, one of the things, you know, I guess, when will we know how much we're going to get? Hopefully, I mean, I think in the governor's budget address, which is in December, she will need to probably address some of that. So that gives Amy and I a little bit of time to maybe try and put a plan together by January. But it would be nice if we knew something a little bit sooner, but I don't know that. Questions?
So the money that Sioux Falls and Rapid City get apart from this, they can spend that on anything?
They can spend it on the same eligibilities that the state can. All that money is money that the state gets, the cities get, the counties get, the tribes get. They're all subject to those six eligibilities that Andy talked on. And now Sioux Falls is throwing in some of that $26 million into that water reclamation facility. So
this, you put this together for a presentation to us or to some other people or what?
We talked to the South Dakota Water and Wastewater Association a couple of weeks ago, and that's when we put it together. And I also talked to the Planning District 3 down in Mitchell earlier in September too. So yeah, we've been given this a couple of times, and we just thought we'd rehash it with you guys.
And I'll be talking to the Municipal League October 7th, too.
So one question from further back today with regard to the application from Sioux Falls. If we authorized approved amount of money they're asking for, was there any money left for the rest of the people, for the rest of the little towns?
Yeah, I think we're, you know, we kind of went from our cash on hand basis to our cash flow model. So we've been working with our financial advisor, and probably, I think we just found out the new number here within the last few days. So we'll probably be having a discussion with our financial advisor to talk over the cash flow model. I suspect we will. If we need to, we'll go back out to the bond market and issue bonds if we need to. And at some point in time, we do need to go back to the bond market to do a state match only issue. And at that time, if we have to do a leveraged issue, we will.
Very good. Thank you. Andy?
All right, moving into November meeting. November is typically our kind of what we call a planning meeting, so we'll be presenting our water plan application at that time. We'll be holding a public hearings for our intended use plans, all of our state revolving funds and projects. And then we'll also be presenting the annual omnibus bill to the board. Couple other minor things we have. Our bond council contract with Perkins Coie is expiring at the end of the year, so we will hopefully have that to approve a new contract with them. Obviously, with the RFP that we go through today, we'll select this technical assistance provider and then address the Sioux Falls deferred application. So that's what I know of at this point.
Do you see this as being a half a day meeting like today, or do you see it being a 2-day meeting?
I'm hoping that we can get it done in a half a day. I think it's going to depend a little bit on once we get the state water plant application. The other opportunity, or if it's going to be too long, I suppose we could start maybe at 10, take a few steps on, come back in the afternoon.
Yeah, it's probably going to depend on how fast I can call. Certainly, last year we had 55 state water plan applications. We had more than that in hand at this point in time, by far. And I anticipate that it's going to be well over 100. So it's going to be a lot of projects being discussed. We'll kind of try and keep it as streamlined as we can, and yet still try and give a little information on each project,
right?
Because it's going to be real interesting.
Right. Okay. Very good. Thank you very much. Item number 15 is adjourned. Do we have a motion?
So moved, Bernard.
Second, Bernard.
A motion has been made and seconded. We are adjourned. Thank you very much for your time. Thanks for staff and everyone for all the hard work that you've done getting ready for today.